Howdy, my name's Jared Holt, and welcome to Shitpost. This is a podcast at the intersection of tech, politics, and culture. Every other week, I bring on a guest from that realm who I think is doing interesting work or has an interesting perspective. That's researchers, journalists, academics, and so forth. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on the player of your choice, leave us a nice review, and if you want, check out the newsletter. We host that on Substack, and there's a link in the description.
There are 25 to 30 U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine.
Whether the United States has biological weapons programs.
Secretive biolabs in Ukraine, labs that are conducting experiments on highly dangerous.
What about these labs? What about this accusation?
Biolabs. If you've been online in the last couple weeks, you may have been surprised to see who's been talking about them. In the lead up to and after its invasion of Ukraine, Russian state officials and media outlets have been accusing the country of harboring sinister U.S.-sponsored laboratories. For years, the Kremlin has been accusing the U.S. and its allies of using these labs to conduct dangerous experiments, potentially even developing biological weapons, and subjugating unknowing Ukrainians to their experiments. Some officials in Russia and allied China have even suggested these labs were responsible for the generation of COVID-19. With these claims, Russia hopes to justify its invasion of Ukraine and the brutality that it has unleashed on its citizens. Claims of nefarious biolabs date back to the Cold War, and claims about U.S.-sponsored labs unleashing COVID to the beginning of the pandemic. Though perhaps obvious, it feels necessary to make clear that this is nonsense. There simply is no evidence to support these claims, just conjecture over what labs do and some hand-fisted assertions of their purposes. The U.S. does support medical and biodefense labs across the former Soviet Union, that's true. But there is no evidence to support claims that the labs are used to develop bioweapons programs or that they were involved in producing and unleashing COVID-19. These accusations are built off two far-reaching assumptions. That COVID-19 was manufactured as a bioweapon, it wasn't, and that the U.S. would only fund research labs in order to secretly produce weapons, which it wouldn't. Despite this reach, the claim has found a willing enabler in hyperpartisan pro-Trump media. Tucker Carlson, America's most watched cable news program host, has gone to bat for this, as have countless right-wing influencers and anti-vax influencers at this point. So why are these claims finding newfound popularity in the American right? Did something change? Where did this come from? And where has it gone? Joining me this week to help answer some of those questions is Justin Ling. He's a freelance investigative reporter in Canada who has done excellent work on this narrative's origins and its adoption by the far right. And Justin, I have to say, you also did a lot of excellent work around the convoy protests in Canada, too. I was following along for that. Thanks for coming on this week.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to do it.
So let's start with the basics. I touched on this for a moment in the opening, but where does this claim come from? I mean, it almost sounds like something out of an Alex Jones rant about, you know, chemicals in the labs.
They turn the friggin' frogs gay!
It's a bit more nefarious, I suppose, than that.
I mean, Alex Jones, I think, wishes he could have come up with this when, in fact, it was invented. And we have to be very blunt about this. The origins of this conspiracy theory are Russian. You know, this has been a Russian talking point for, you know, off and on for about a decade, maybe longer. And we have to understand why that is, right? Russia has basically tried to deflect criticisms of its own lingering bioweapons program by suggesting that the U.S. is running its own clandestine secret laboratories throughout Eastern Europe, Georgia, the Caucasus, and so on. This has been an ongoing effort that has, I don't think, has been all that serious, to be totally honest, because it's just so outlandish that no one buys it. It is just sort of a, you know, there's always sort of a din of disinformation coming from the Putin regime, and there has been for about 20 years on a variety of fronts, and this is just one of them. They often don't expect anyone to believe it. They just say it so that they don't ever have to actually face scrutiny on many fronts, right?
Yeah, especially in the last couple of years, like Russian officials and even Chinese officials have kind of just thrown this out there.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of walk away from it like nothing happened.
Yeah. And let's understand, you know, where it comes from, right? After, well, you know, in the Cold War, the Soviet Union was running an incredibly complicated, expensive, and far-reaching bioweapons program. They were developing pathogens that could be used in warfare. I mean, you know, they were, you know, there has been extensive interviews given by a former head of the bioweapons program who basically said, we were looking how to dry and aerosolize things like anthrax so that it could be airdropped over civilian or fighter populations in places like Chechnya. The idea was, you know, if you didn't want to commit ground forces or spend months shelling, you know, difficult to reach areas such as in the mountains, in the Caucasus, well, then just airdrop some anthrax and hope they all die. I mean, this was the actual purpose. It also fit into a broader sort of deterrence package that was supposed to be kind of a complement to nuclear war, right? When after you nuke DC and New York and so on and so forth, you airdrop some of these bioweapons onto civilian populations to kind of finish the job. It was supposed to be kind of a harbinger of the end of times. I mean, this is how the Soviets and to some degree the Americans as well thought during much of the Cold War. The difference is, the Americans canceled their bioweapons program, realizing it was a ridiculous, both a ridiculous and horrifying development, but also a massive waste of money. Nixon signed an order mothballing their bioweapons program, and they were honest about it. There has never been any evidence, really, that the U.S. government has continued its bioweapons program. Meanwhile, we know, thanks to a variety of sources, including U.S. inspectors and Russians as well, that the Soviets kept their bioweapons program going right up until the 1990s. And there has recently been a ton of attention paid to the fact that they probably kept it going right into probably to present day. So Russia has for years been putting out officials, has been using state media to suggest that, in fact, it's America who has a secret bioweapons program and it's right at their doorstep. And it is sort of a justification for why they're doing it themselves. And, you know, just finally, in the weeks leading up to the invasion, you saw a renewed effort on this front. You've seen a Bulgarian journalist who has frequently peddled Russian disinformation, including the suggestion that the Skripal poisoning was, you know, lead-based paint poisoning or something ridiculous like that. She has come out and published documents that are wildly misrepresented, suggesting the U.S. government was doing active testing on Ukrainian and Georgian soldiers with their bioweapons program. So, and for that work, she got celebrated by a pro-Russian politician with a journalism award. So this has been sort of at a low rumble for quite some time. It has picked up, it's died down, but it's always kind of been in the background. And so there was a lot of stuff on the record for, you know, well, you know, good digging conspiracy theorists to pick up on.
Yeah. And I was talking with some of my colleagues at DFR Lab about this, who have been tracking these kind of narratives for years. You know, it hit domestic audiences, which put it in my lane. So I'm very almost like kind of fresh to this. Right. And from what I understand of what they were telling me is a lot of these narratives, not only did they kind of bubble and simmer, they were seemingly, you know, kind of intended for a domestic Russian audience, right? They were, you know, these claims would be put out, and as you said, it would be used to either deflect or justify actions that the Russian government was engaged in. But somehow this made it over to U.S. audiences and kind of caught fire. You've got Tucker Carlson, Tulsi Gabbard, even though she's kind of walked it back, Glenn Greenwald getting in on this. I saw a screenshot of him the other day that I thought was really funny, of him doing his podcast or whatever it was, and like a screenshot of TASS, which is like a Russian state media entity, as if it's legitimate, which, you know, of course, puts him alongside Donald Trump Jr. Mm-hmm. You had a really great piece in Foreign Policy kind of explaining a bit how this became a thing in America. And I was wondering if you could walk listeners through that a bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, I mean, you're totally right about, you know, this being largely for a domestic audience up until this point, because no one else would believe it, right? You know, some of this was just parroting Chinese, Xinhua's ridiculous assertion that COVID-19 did not come from China, but came from a U.S. bioweapons program. You know, all this stuff, Russia just loves amplifying it because why not cause chaos, right? But the one thing about all of this is, as I'm sure you know, as you definitely know very well, Russia's actually not even that good at disinformation, right? It's a very blunt instrument often. What you really need is people who properly understand the American context to take the elements of those conspiracy theories and repackage them into something that, you know, domestic audiences in America will actually believe. And that's what happened the very first day of the war. You know, in the hours after bombs started falling in Ukraine, you saw this Twitter account that is run by this, you know, long-time sort of mid-level QAnon guy. At the time, he was going by War Clandestine. He's changed his name 1,000 times, always evading a Twitter suspension. But he basically just put out this very crude map. It looks like he made it himself. But it basically said, you know, here are all of the bio labs in Ukraine that are US funded. And he had this, you know, he's like, I had a holy shit moment. And he basically kind of runs through this conspiracy theory along the way, linking to both this Russian and Chinese disinformation from years prior that no one believed, and basically said, what if, you know, this bombing campaign is really about striking these biological laboratories? And he says, you know, point blank, maybe Russia and China were worried about another COVID-19, so they started hitting them. And
right, and that's something that, like, not even Russia could have, like, thought of. They had this pre-existing narrative, brilliant, but they hadn't connected the line. But this, like, QAnon guy rushes in and is like, I've got a marker, let's connect these dots.
Yeah, again, you know, Putin wishes he was good enough at disinformation to do this sort of thing, and he's just frankly not. And it does tie into a strain that has been in QAnon for a little while, which is this idea that Vladimir Putin is part of Donald Trump's anti-deep state brigade, right? You know, there's the sort of A-team of rooting out the satanic pedophile cult that's secretly running the world. Not that that has been a terribly convincing or popular conspiracy theory, is, you know, kind of been on the table for a while. But this War Clandestine account, we know his first name is Jacob. I still figured his last name. If he's listening and wants to tell me, get in touch. But Jacob, you know, spins this tale where Joe Biden and the deep state and the New World Order are, you know, kind of merrily parading along after having stolen the 2020 election and, you know, created COVID-19 and are well on the way to developing a social credit system with the World Economic Forum and subjecting everyone into a global tyranny. And Vladimir Putin finally decides to stand up and say no to it. You know, this is the world he's living in. You know, this epic battle of good and evil is playing out right now in Ukraine. It is also, you know, this prevalent idea amongst some of these folks that Ukraine is a sort of playground for the deep state, right? Hillary Clinton goes there to vacation or whatever, right? There's always a sort of
the laptop from hell, baby. Yeah,
It's also why Hunter Biden, works for Bruce. But yeah,
in the last two presidential elections, Ukraine blasted to the front, whether it's the Uranium One deal or whether it is Hunter Biden on the board of some company. So it's already in the zeitgeist for sure.
Exactly. So all he's really doing is taking some of that kind of bog standard QAnon stuff, slapping it with some Russian and Chinese propaganda as confirmation, and then applying, you know, pulling the red twine between a few current events and going, well, this is why the war's really happening. And the reality is, if it was just sort of ended there, I think we all would have gone, oh, great, QAnon has another, you know, JFK Jr. moment. They have a wild delusion about why the war is really happening. And we all would have moved on. But what happens is something, you know, that doesn't normally happen in this space, which is Russia kind of intervenes to give some quote unquote official confirmation. At first, it starts with a statement from, of all places, the embassy in Sarajevo, which puts out the statement suggesting that the U.S. was funding the creation of a bioweapon in Ukraine that targeted Slavic people, which is also been a part of this going back a few years.
I love to design bioweapons that can discern Slavs from the rest. Jesus, man.
I mean, it's just so ludicrous that, like, you know, who would buy it? But you know, who would buy it? And it's QAnon, right? So as soon as they put that out, Jacob gets back on Twitter and goes, damn it, I knew I was right. You know, proven right yet again. And he takes a little victory lap. And in the days that follow, you start seeing it get a little more prevalent on 8chan, on the QAnon boards. You start seeing it pop up a little more on Twitter. When Twitter suspends his account, there is a whole new round of people posting it, reposting it. InfoWars picks up the story and does a really breathless kind of recounting of what he's alleging. And you start seeing Red Pill 78, who's a very prominent kind of QAnon vlogger, podcaster, not only trumpet the theory, but bring him on the show with a QAnon-linked candidate for a House seat in Ohio. And you start seeing this kind of get a little more prevalent, a little more prevalent, and then suddenly Sputnik, you know, the one of the one of this Russian state propaganda outlets, just full on. Report it. Just you know, breathlessly say the U.S. government is covering up allegations that this attack is over bioweapons, and then we're off to the races. This is basically where the thing hits the mainstream. You know, at the whole time, Jacob is going on Twitter and everywhere where they will listen to him, going, "This was my theory. I came up with this. I want credit."
Yeah,
that was to very little avail.
That was the funniest part. Is he's like making the rounds, feeling that he did not get the clout he deserved, right?
And oftentimes with these sort of things, you can sort of claim, okay, he may have said it first, but that's not where we got it from, right? You know, we came to this because it's truth, and we're not alleging the same crazy stuff that he is. But what's so funny about that is that they're using the same terminology. Nobody says biolabs. Biolabs isn't really a thing. Biolabs just means biological laboratory, which every single country has, you know, dozens if not hundreds of, if not thousands of, right? So the fact that we're all saying biolabs is credit to the fact that it came from this one fucking guy, because that's the exact terminology he was using, right? You know, there is a direct line between his, you know, Crazy Town Banana Pants theory about these biolabs and what Tucker Carlson was, you know, has said, you know, three times over the last week on his show. This has originated from QAnon, and if anyone pretends that it didn't, they're lying to you. You know, even when Tucker did this little segment, he actually cited my reporting and went, the media says it's coming from QAnon, whatever that is. And it's just, you know, and of course he's being willfully obtuse. Of course he's, you know, trying very hard to obscure that connection. But the connection is incredibly direct. You can see all the points along the way where the Russian government and at one point the Chinese government have encouraged the, you know, the belief in this theory, have basically cajoled it along. And it's been horrifyingly effective.
So several government entities have responded to these claims head on now, including the U.S. government. There's been statements from DOD, State Department, etc. And one of those government responses seems to have intensified this theory's spread in a major way. And that was during a congressional hearing on March 8th. Senator Marco Rubio asked Victoria Nuland, who's the undersecretary for state for political affairs, whether Ukraine had biological or chemical weapons. And instead of just saying no, flat no, she said this instead.
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
So this is just, you know, one kind of cherry-picked example of how the U.S. government has responded to these theories and their spread. But it's an important one, I think, because this was interpreted by a lot of the people pushing this theory as some kind of confirmation. So I'm curious if you saw the same uptake, kind of what you thought about her answer there and what it might tell us about how governments respond to disinformation and, you know, what is effective, what is not.
Yeah, so first of all, I think this would have hit the mainstream even without Nuland's comments. I mean, it was picking up momentum at a rate where it was inevitable. You know, I told my editor, I mean, I'm like, we are a week away from Marjorie Taylor Greene endorsing this theory, right? You know, at the rate it's going, this is going to be, you know, massive in a matter of days. Her comments didn't help. I also suspect, you know, I've rewatched her answer a couple times now. I also suspect she doesn't know, she didn't know what this conspiracy theory was. This was exactly the point where it was incredibly prevalent online and in some far right channels, but it had not really hit I don't think it would have hit necessarily the attention of the U.S. government to the same degree. I don't think she realized just how much that comment was going to add fuel to the fire. And let's be really clear about what she said. You know, she, you can hear her say it. You know, she was saying Ukraine has biological laboratories, and obviously there's a real concern about what happens when you bomb a biological laboratory that may have samples of the plague or naturally occurring anthrax inside, which is, you know, is not a bioweapon in the sense, but it is actually weaponizing biology. I mean, if we've seen Russian intentionally target nuclear facilities in a sense using them as nuclear weapons, right? So in a sense, Russia is trying to make biological weapons out of otherwise, non-military, peaceful biological laboratories. So I can see what went into her thinking behind those comments, but it was not helpful, as we now know. It is the thing that everybody, you know, hangs their hat on. But of course, the U.S. government has never denied that there's Pentagon-funded military, Pentagon-funded biological laboratories in Ukraine. Someone's going to grab that comment and prove that it was that I'm in on it all along. But, the Pentagon has funded these laboratories for a variety of reasons, right? You know, they have put money into these former Soviet laboratories, some of them military in nature, some of them not, in order to securitize them, to keep samples safe, to prevent an outbreak. And it has it's put money into research on naturally occurring pathogens to stop an infectious disease outbreak like COVID-19 or Ebola or whatever. So the U.S. government, I think, as much as it can, is trying to get that on the record and trying to underscore the degree to which this is incredibly common. It's actually decreasing the likelihood of an infectious disease outbreak, not increasing it. It's decreasing the likelihood of any sort of weaponized pathogen ever making it to the public because it has destroyed an enormous number of samples from the former Soviet program. But at a certain point, nothing the U.S. government can say or do is going to dispel this, right? You know, look at someone like Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald's entire ethos for the past couple of years has been, if the U.S. government says it, the opposite is true, right? Like that is his worldview, and he's not terribly coy about it. I mean, this has been his entire kind of refrain on the biolabs thing. He's basically said, well, yes, the State Department says they're not doing this research, therefore they are, and this is, you know, and I. You know, I'm somebody who had great respect for Glenn Greenwald, you know, several years ago, and I'm sad that reporting out the Snowden leaks has melted his brain. But that's where we're at, and he's no longer a credible actor on this front, and it's really disappointing to see how many people still listen to him.
And I just want to butt in and say, like, skepticism of the government in its public statements or whatever, that is one thing. In many senses, I can't fault anybody for being like, oh, maybe we should, you know, ask the State Department for proof or evidence of whatever it's claiming, especially to people who are maybe about my age who, you know, their only experience watching the U.S. engage on the world stage has really been the disaster in Iraq, right? So I get it, right? But that is a different thing than taking it where Glenn takes it, which is it is not skepticism. It is not curiosity anymore. It is just, they said A, B is true. And, you know, it's nonsense. It's brain drivel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's also a distinction we have to make between lying about chemical or biological weapons to justify a war and telling the truth about those same very things to discourage a war, right? You know, the U.S. lied about chemical weapons in Iraq to enable the war on terror, and we shouldn't try to excuse that. But also in this instance, they're telling the truth to try and discourage a war in Ukraine. So we can't constantly just reject everything the U.S. government says simply because they have lied in the past, right? You kind of have to trust but verify all this stuff. And it's worth noting that numerous non-proliferation experts and numerous third-party groups have assessed these claims and deemed them absolutely ludicrous, and have said pointedly, Russia is probably the most malign actor in the world, maybe after China, in terms of running a clandestine bio weapons program. So again, people like Glenn Greenwald, who are fixated on all of the wrongdoings of the U.S. government, are essentially shielding criticism of Russia's own secret program. So, you know, this whole thing is incredibly depressing. You know, for all we talk about, you know, strengthening ourselves from disinformation, we still keep falling down the exact same, you know, rabbit holes every single time. And in terms of what the U.S. government can do to combat this, I mean, you know, the other one major, you know, screw up they had was, and I don't know if this was intentional. I don't know if this was just some, you know, planned outage or what have you. But a bunch of the documents detailing the bio labs, detailing kind of the civilian nature of them, and detailing, by the way, that most of them are in veterinary hospitals, they went offline. And when they went offline, that spurred a ton of people to go, look, we've proven it. You know, if it's not nefarious, then why are the documents missing? Of course, they were available in other parts of the U.S. government website, but because they were missing on the Ukrainian embassy page, it was proof that they had it right all along. And if that was intentional, whoever decided to remove those in hopes that they would short circuit this conspiracy theory needs some serious remedial lessons in how to combat conspiracy theories.
So the last thing I want to get to while we're starting to wrap up here is about sort of how tech companies have reacted, because I thought this was kind of a really interesting case here. A lot of tech companies have banned Russian state media outlets or placed labels on them since Russia invaded Ukraine. Some have been suspended, I think. But this kind of propaganda, which has its origins in this, you know, years, if not decades long Russian disinformation effort, is still persisting, but with American actors as a stand-in. So, you know, these restrictions, these bans, you know, in Europe, it was sanctions against, you know, Russian state media or its affiliates, didn't really necessarily stop Russian propaganda from making its way, and not just making its way, but flourishing online.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I'm curious your personal take on that and what kind of challenges you see there, maybe for tech companies or just in general as people like the folks who listen to this podcast try to wade through everything and make sense of it all.
You know, as you know very well, we've had a long debate over how to best do this, right? Do you just leave everything up and hope that media can sort of give people the tools they need to realize that it's bullshit? Do you slap labels on everything and say, no, in fact, this is misinformation, and read more actual news and information here? Or do you start banning and suspending people and forbidding certain kind of links and terminology and whatnot? And of course, we never actually picked one of these paths. We've kind of done all three terribly at the same time. So, this war clandestine account is a great example. He comes out, does this long Twitter thread. It racks up, I think, maybe low thousands in terms of engagement. Twitter suspends him. Everybody has screenshotted it, and it's getting spread, you know, far and wide. Everything from Dan Scavino fan account to a whole bunch of egg accounts and whatnot. He pops up again as war clandestine this time. Does another thread, thousands of retweets and engagement. Gets suspended again. He comes back as clandestine not. And he has
nice
a little he has a little avatar with him with fake glasses and a fake nose and a mustache.
I wonder who that could be.
I know, and it stays up for like 2 weeks, and Twitter just leaves it up, and it is just racking up. He's just basically reposting the same stuff, you know, providing updates all the time. And it's thousands and thousands and thousands of engagements. And Twitter only finally suspended it again in the last week or so. But at a certain point, you know, the fact that he was back was irrelevant. The damage was sort of already done. He set up actually, what's quite funny is that even as his Twitter account was still going, he was suspended on Getter, which is like, if you can still be up on Twitter and not be on Getter, that is an incredible achievement. But, you know, he also had a Telegram account, and Telegram is doing virtually nothing to remove stuff like this. It has banned some accounts, but generally speaking, he's doing nothing on this front. He also is on Rumble, doing, you know, Red Pill 78 show. He's on TikTok still. TikTok has added little disclaimers at the bottom, which I think is maybe the most effective thing at all at this point. But it's sort of just a mishmash. Like, you'll never be able able to pose a unified front in terms of banning him on every platform. And even if you wanted to, his theory has already been unleashed into the world, and you're never going to stop it. So I think as time goes on, I'm more and more convinced that, that bans are just not effective. There's now just too many platforms to be on, too many useful idiots who want to spread it on all the platforms they exist on. I think we really have to start, you know, thinking about how you give people the red, you know, how you start putting up red flags for people so that they know, the degree to which this stuff is nonsense, right? And there's and maybe that it won't be effective either. Frankly, I'm increasingly cynical about what actually works in this space, because you know something like this, it has been fact checked to death. That has done virtually nothing. It has been corrected by state officials to death. That has done nothing. And it's patently absurd on its face. And that has clearly done nothing. I think if people want to believe, they're going to believe. And I frankly don't think we have the tools at our disposal right now to convince them otherwise.
Yeah, I forget who said it, but it's that old cliche, you can't kill an idea, right?
Yeah.
Been talking to Justin Ling here. He's a freelance investigative reporter in Canada who's been doing some excellent work on this biolab narrative and all kinds of, various coverage of the far right, misinformation, disinformation. I'm going to include links to some of the articles that he's written, his Twitter account, all that good stuff in the description of this episode. Justin, thanks for coming on today. But because this is Shitpost, I do have to ask you one more question before you get out of here, which is, what's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
It's actually kind of a depressing response, but every single video that comes out of Ukraine of any violinist or concert pianist or musician of any type playing music in a bomb shelter, I'm just going to click on it immediately. It is very sad, but weirdly inspiring. It is the exact type of content I weirdly need right now. If you have any good, horribly depressing, quite sad, but weirdly inspiring videos of classically trained musicians playing music as bombs rain overhead, please send it my way. I don't know why I find it comforting, but I do.
Everybody's got that thing that helps them get through it. Justin, thanks for coming up.